Radio Prague News.
The Czech government will meet for a special session on Tuesday to try and find a new EU commissioner. Talks between Prague public transport bosses and unions broke down on Monday, increasing the chances of a bus, tram and metro standstill. And the Ministry of Defence has called for an investigation into army officers wearing Nazi emblems. The Czech government failed on Monday to agree on the Czech candidate to be its next European commissioner. The government will now meet for an extraordinary session on Tuesday morning to try and make some progress. Selection of a candidate to fill the plum post has been complicated by the main parties refusing to budge from their demands that their man gets the job. Prime Minister Jan Fischer made the surprise suggestion over the weekend that central bank governor Zdeněk Tuma could fill the post. That suggestion got the brush off from the main parties. Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek said on Monday that parties should advance new candidates on the latest by Wednesday if there is no breakthrough beforehand. He added that the country's European reputation is at stake. Talks between unions representing Prague public transport workers and the city's public transport authority broke down on Monday, increasing the risk of a public transport strike. The unions and a crisis committee created to deal with the transport authority's problems failed to agree on a series of demands put forward by the unions. Talks are due to resume on Wednesday, with unions warning they will start strike preparations if there is no breakthrough. The unions are angered by threatened layoffs and a mooted 7% pay cut planned by managers. They want the city to give a new cash injection to the operator of Prague's bus, tram and metro network. Prague Mayor Pavel Bem has offered an extra 900 million crowns, but the unions say that is insufficient. Czech Defence Minister Martin Bartak has called for an immediate investigation into a report that two officers in an elite army unit serving Afghanistan wore Nazi emblems on their helmets. The minister said the behaviour was unacceptable and tarnished the reputation of Czech units serving abroad. The newspaper Mladá Fronta Dnes reported the case on Monday. It said the two officers wore the emblems of two SS units for almost the whole of their tour in Logar. One of the officers has expressed regret over the matter, saying he put a Nazi symbol on his helmet for a joke because it contained the letter H and his name was Honza. Czech unemployment fell for the first time in a year in October. The jobless rate dropped by 0.1 percentage point to 8.5% compared with September, according to figures released by the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs. The total number of Czechs out of work ready to take up a job fell by just over 2,000 over the month, dropping below the half-million mark. Some analysts warn that the decrease is mainly due to seasonal factors, with the unemployment trend still upward and likely to reach 9.3% by the end of the year. The weather is set to stay overcast for the next few days, with maximum temperatures of 10 degrees Celsius. My name's Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech army embroiled in scandal as two elite soldiers serving in Afghanistan are found wearing Nazi insignia. One of the few Czechs to witness the fall of the Berlin Wall remembers that momentous day.
The day the wall was opened, you know, it was really an experience which you have only once in life.
We'll have a roundup of all the latest sports news and an interview with a man who still believes in a world without private property, Jozef Skála, the newly elected deputy leader of the Communist Party. Just 3 days ago, Jan Čermák and Hinek Matonoha, members of the Czech Rapid Response Force serving in Logar, Afghanistan, were awarded medals by the Czech Defence Minister and the country's Chief of Staff. 3 days later, the two, along with the army itself, are embroiled in a major scandal. The Czech daily Mladá Fronta Dnes reported on Monday that the two officers had worn Nazi emblems on their helmets during their tour of duty. What's more, the daily says there is evidence their superior knew of of the situation, but chose to try and cover the matter up. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Czech soldiers serving in Afghanistan are supposed to represent the country's very best. But now many will be questioning just exactly what that means. On Monday, Mladá Fronta Dnes broke the story that two officers had worn Nazi emblems of SS units on their helmets while serving in the province of Logar. First Lieutenant Jan Čermák wore the emblem of the Hohenstaufen 9th Panzer Division, while First Warrant Officer Hinek Matanoha wore the emblem of the SS Dirlewanger Brigade. Confronted by the paper which had obtained photos, the 27-year-old Čermák admitted he had used the emblem but called it kind of a joke, saying he had used it only because it contained the letter H. That is the first letter of the colloquial version of his first name, Honza. Not surprisingly, many aren't buying his excuse. A little earlier I spoke to Zdeněk Zbořil, an expert on right-wing extremism.
He has to know that this emblem, this symbol, has been on the helmets of the SS Waffen, and I don't believe that he doesn't know that it's a symbol of the German army. I am shocked by it, yes. First of all, that is a Czech soldier or soldier of Czech army could use this emblem or symbol of SS. And a second shock is that these people have been officers. Third, how is it possible that the chief of this military unit is trying to put it in the darkness, to speak on it as a small incident which is not important for the character or ethos of his units?
When they learned the news, members of the top military brass expressed both disgust and disbelief over the matter. And on Monday, Defense Minister Martin Bartak ordered a full investigation. He promised there would be repercussions for any who, aware of the situation, had failed to act. Mladá Fronta Dnes has pointed to the officer's superior, Petr Procházka, who allegedly ordered the helmet covers featuring the SS emblems, as well as all related photographs, destroyed. The paper has also questioned whether the orders could have come from higher up. Certainly, there are those who knew what was going on. Members of the elite unit serving in Logar issued a letter in anonymity just recently, complaining of having to serve under the two, also making clear they honored the values of their brigade and respected their mission within NATO. Their response came after it was revealed by Mladá Fronta Dnes last week that another professional soldier had provided training to members of the white supremacist movement back home. Now the army is facing major questions over this latest case and over the fact that there are those with neo-Nazi leanings within military ranks. Officials have said in the past that anyone with ties to extremism has no place in the military, but so far the army has not proven especially effective in clamping down on the problem. Many observers will be hoping this time, in this case, things will be different.
Jan Wellinger with that unsettling report. World leaders, past and present, gathered in Berlin on Monday for the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. The celebrations, which will culminate with the toppling of a symbolic wall of giant dominoes, have attracted more than 100,000 people so far, and more are expected. One of them is Stepan Bender, a Czech emigre who's lived in Berlin since 1968, after he emigrated from communist Czechoslovakia. He was there when the wall came down, and earlier today he shared his memories of the historic event with my colleague Sarah Borovka.
20 years ago I was in the cinema, you know, and suddenly somebody told there in front of the audience, you know, that the wall is open. So we stopped the screening and we went to the streets. You know? And I went to the Checkpoint Charlie first, and later I went to Brandenburger Tor. There were already people, you know, greeting the people from the east.
And what was the atmosphere like in Berlin that evening? What was it
like? You
know,
the day the wall was opened, you know, it was really an experience which you have only once in life, you know. It was really fantastic, and the people were fantastic. They were greeting the people from the east, paying for them, then giving them a bottle of champagne and things like that, you know. But for me, it was a special experience as well, because, you know, I was the Czech refugee living in Berlin. I never could go on to the other side, the wall. wall was completely hermetic to me, and I felt that something happened, you know, which will change my life. It was, you know, after 22 years of being in exile, and I believed in that day, you know, that I will go home. I will be allowed to go home.
And can you tell me in detail or a little more what you did that day at the wall? You went there from the cinema, and then did you meet some people and get drinks? Or?
Of course we got some drinks. You know, I can tell you only that at the end I was completely drunk, you know. And we spent the night somewhere in the pub I knew, you know, and but with completely unknown people to us.
And what is your favorite memory of that day? Is there something that stands out?
I was living in Berlin for 22 years, and once I was crying on the wall. It was 6 years after my emigration. I met my sister on the wall, but from the other side. You know, I climbed those steps. They were there, and I could saw her for 10 minutes, and I was speaking to her, and after the Volkspolizei came, and she had to leave. And this night, you know, I went by subway, and it was full of those people from East Berlin, and it was unbelievable because they were looking around, you know, like little children, you know, like babies, and laughing, and they couldn't believe it. What's going on?
And are you going to celebrate tonight?
Yes, we have a party. Of course, I will see those Evans in the street. But at 9 o'clock in the evening, we have a party in the Czech embassy, and there will be a rock concert. Some people from one of those plastic people of the universe. Do you know them? It was a very famous underground dissident band in Prague. I think the group is called Garage or something like that. And I think it will be for the first time that in the Czech embassy will be, directly in the building, will be a rock concert, you know. And it will, I hope it will end at 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that.
Czech emigres Stepan Bender planning a late night. And speaking earlier there to Sarah Borufka. So what are your memories of the fall of the Berlin Wall? Were you there? Do you remember watching it on TV perhaps? Write in and tell us, english@radio.cz. Now joining us for a roundup of all the latest sports news is Ian Willoughby.
We begin today with ice hockey, and the Czech Republic came last with only 1 point in Finland's Karjala Cup, one of four competitions in the Euro Hockey Tour. The remarkable thing is that the Czechs went in front in all three of their games and ended up losing each one. After defeat to Sweden and the hosts, the Czech Republic led Russia after 9 minutes on Sunday through goals from Jan Bullis and Pavel Brendl. But once again that lead evaporated, and they were beaten 4-3 in overtime by the tournament winners. Czech coach Vladimír Růžička shared his thoughts with reporters after Sunday's game.
I think we didn't disappoint today in terms of how we played, but hockey is all about goals. We scored fewer of them, and we have to get ready for the next tournament. These tournaments are very evenly balanced, and now a tough tournament faces us in Russia, maybe even tougher than this one.
The Channel 1 Cup takes place in Moscow in the middle of December. It'll be the final competition for the Czech hockey team ahead of the Winter Olympics in Vancouver in February. Už mi prostě není 30 let. Alt už mi je prostě 35. The decathlete Roman Chebrila sings I'm Not 30 Anymore, I'm 35 in a humorous performance at the Czech Athlete of the Year Awards in Prague on Saturday night. He was a five-time winner of the main prize, though his mantle has now passed to Barbara Špatáková, with the javelin star this year taking the award for the third time in a row. The women's world record holder this year took silver in the javelin at the World Athletics Championships in Berlin, becoming the only member of the Czech team to take home a medal. And Špatáková's coach, Rudolf Černý, was named Trainer of the Year for the fourth time in succession. Finally, football, and the big game in the Czech League at the weekend was the top-of-the-table clash between Teplice and Jablonec. Both teams had been on 29 points going into Saturday's game, with Teplice only ahead thanks to superior goal difference. But now they've got a rather more substantial lead after a 1-0 home win. The only goal of that match was a curious one, with a shot by Adin Mahmutovic rocketing off the crossbar and then going in off Teplice keeper Michal Spitt. That's all the sport for today.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, broadcasting in six languages across the globe. Coming up next is time for an interview with Dr. Josef Skála, the newly elected deputy chairman of the Communist Party.
Twenty years after the fall of Czechoslovakia's communist regime, the Communist Party of Bohemia and Moravia has retained both its communist label and much of its ideology. Our guest in this edition of One on One, Josef Skála, recently became one of the party's deputy leaders. In the late 1980s, Mr. Skála was the head of the Prague-based International Union of Students, and on its behalf he decorated the country's last communist leader, Miloš Jakeš, just 2 days before the student demonstration triggered on the 17th of November, the Velvet Revolution.
When Mr. Jakeš came to the headquarters of the IUS the 15th of November, we had two very small lifts there, and that's why we were going up to the last floor, and the only way was to go only two people in the lift, not any bodyguards and so on. And believe me or not, the debate I had with him from the ground floor to the sixth floor was related to one question. Tell me, please, could you guarantee me that there will not be any kind of clashes, any kind of violence, any kind of anything like this? And he was looking at me and saying, what do you think, we are stupid or what? Obviously, we are doing our best not to allow anything similar.
What do you think the communist leadership back then, even in the months preceding the fall of the regime, what do you think they had in mind? Do you think they had in mind the well-being of the people they were governing, or do you think that they care more about their power, really?
Any generalization like this is obviously too much black and white. If there is more time, we should speak about individual people. But there is even many books which somehow depict the conflicts among the top echelons of power, and even the very peculiar scenario of the Narodni Street story when the policeman from the state police was lying down, I mean, and pretending to be dead and so on. So it indicates something. So there were obviously groups which were trying to provoke something and use it for their very particular interests, which was obviously an extremely stupid scenario. Coming back to your initial question, I know a number of people which were very honest and even capable, and they did not get a chance to manifest it in the respective, let's say, level of power in time. That was the tragedy of the 80s.
For example, today, when you're elected in parliament, or maybe even you become a member of government or prime minister, you rely on the vote, on the support you received in free election. What were these people relying on? I mean, do you think they thought about who supports them, where their power is grounded?
This would need a very long reply, because, as you know, politics today in Czech Republic, simply as a matter of comparison, would you say that there is a fair competition among political subjects, or it's a matter of money, who is pumping money where and so on? So in a socialist society, there is not a private capital which would let's say finance campaigns of this or those. Obviously, socialism should have developed to a more and more let's say democratic phase, even in terms of the political mechanism, let's call it like this. And this was the ambition of my generation, yes.
It seems that many members of the Communist Party changed their views on all kinds of issues after 1989, including, for example, private enterprise. In the 1970s and 80s, your party condemned
the exploitation of man by man, as the phrase ran. But after 1989, you yourself started a business. When did you discover that exploitation can be fun?
No, there is no contradiction in this, because we still think that people should not be exploited. This is a program for our party up to now, and it will be forever. Well, forever is maybe a too strong formulation. If you are obliged in a new situation somehow to feed your family, and there is this lustration, or how we say it in English, law, which, and other, let's say, measures which are somehow ousting people of that kind like myself, then you are obliged to find some, let's say, space, some niche in this new society. So you are forced to do it. It's not a free decision. It's a quasi-free decision.
Your party has apologized several times for the wrongs committed during the four decades of communist rule. But the Communist Party today seems to still rely on very much on what analysts would call the protest vote. That is, on people who are against the regime and have severe reservations and perhaps would prefer to live in the regime that ended in 1989. Do you think that the Communist Party in this particular respect perhaps missed an opportunity to reform itself and become a Western European-style left-wing party?
Again, it's a matter of criteria. I would formulate it in a different way. The Communist Party is a systemic opposition, yes. Why to, let's say, hide it? We believe that the rights and interests of the people could be sufficiently materialized only beyond the horizon of capitalism. That's our, let's say, deep conviction. And I think the present financial and economic crisis is bringing quite interesting evidences of that. The happy end of history, as it was called by certain Western, let's say, theoreticians and so on, was rather a mystery than, let's say, a realistic forecast. In terms of reforms, I can second what you said in a little bit different way, yeah. But there's a number of reasons which should be more deeply understood. Is it easy to be a communist today, let's say in my age or for younger people? It's not easy to be, let's say, openly a communist, not to go to some meetings and so on, because you are risking, let's say, existential troubles, which are not small. And that is why there is hundreds of thousands of people which are voting us, let's say, which are in the elections with us, but they have a problem, I mean, to manifest their beliefs, I mean, more openly in the day-by-day life. It's clear. This is multiplying some sort of a ghetto effect. Those who are inside that party are pressurized by various, let's say, factors around themselves, and it's multiplying in them some sort of a, I would not call it a sectarianism, but some sort of a lack of capability to go beyond that border and speak with the people in a way which would be understandable to them and which would really attract them. This is a disease which is also, let's say, very, let's say, which also I feel as a big problem. And people like myself are doing our best to somehow overcome it.
In the central Bohemian region, the Communist Party supports the Social Democrat government, and the governor, Social Democrat David Rath, said that such cooperation could work well on the national level as well. So do you see Social Democrats and Communists in a coalition government after the next general elections in May 2010?
I cannot, let's say, give you any exact forecast, but let's follow rather an objective logic of the Czech politics. The pendulum is somehow moving back to the left. And it's a matter of social situation of most of the people, which would worsen still more and more. And all the optimistic forecasts, which are channeled through certain media, are, to my opinion, a soap opera, because the genuine, let's say, repercussions of the crisis are still coming. And social democrats, if they wish, let's take it from their point of view, if they really wish to make an alternative government and not any hybrid, let's say, with Civic Democratic Party and the other right-wing forces, then there is no other way than to find a certain modus vivendi with ourselves. And nobody's insisting on that we should be, I don't know how many ministers. We are not seeking for posts and something like this. The model which is applied in Central Bohemia is one of the options which, to my opinion, can be applied in the whole of the country. Nobody's claiming that we should be, let's say, inside the government, provided there is some sort of a some sort of a deal, not in any commercial and, let's say, other, let's say, respects, but a genuine political agreement among two left-wing parties, which would guarantee to the people of this country much more, let's say, viable, suitable, and social-oriented, social-friendly policies. I mean, that's perhaps the key goal.
Some interesting views there from Dr. Josef Skála, the new deputy chairman of the Czech Communist Party. Tell us if you agree with them or even disagree with them. The address is english@radio.cz for your emails, Radio Prague 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, for your letters. If you joined us halfway through that, you can listen again on our website, radio.cz. So for now, from me, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.